From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Speaker Madigan and his caucus have left town. They're gone. They're on vacation. They're not doing their jobs. We are not solving the crises before us.
We were at the table. We were at the table at meetings that were convened by the governor's office, and it was not the speaker, it was not the Senate president that terminated those meetings. It was the governor.
Senator, that's not true.
I'm not finished.
Senator, that's
not
true.
I'm not finished.
That's false.
I'm not finished.
We have mandated 18 unpaid furlough days in addition to those previously issued for all professional staff and administrators, effectively withholding an entire month's pay. And as of tomorrow, 177 civil service employees will be laid off. Some are single parents, some are dealing with health issues, and in some cases, the layoffs will affect both husband and wife in the same household.
Every week, the same story, more fallout from the lack of a state budget. Meanwhile, the primary election just days away. We heard from David Glassman there. He's the Eastern Illinois University president, talking about pay cuts and layoffs taking place at his university. Also, Senator Kwame Raoul from a hearing earlier this week, and Governor Bruce Rauner going on the attack against House Democrats once again. Well, we'll give you a preview of all of that coming up on today's State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey is our IPR reporter. And our guest, Jordan Abadea. She's a political reporter for WICS-TV in Springfield. Well, let me throw it to our folks at the state capitol. Higher education being dismantled in Illinois. That was a claim this week, yet it seemed as though university presidents who testified before a Senate committee were firing back and maybe changing their tone a little bit.
I definitely think this is a turning point in the state right now. We're hearing a more desperate call from university presidents saying we cannot keep on this path. We are finally having to lay people off, starting furloughs. And I think this is definitely a changing point in this whole discussion that we've been having for higher ed for weeks now.
And Jordan, it's not as though they didn't know this was coming down the pike if they don't get a budget. Why now? Any idea why, you know, is this some plan that they've come up with to say we're going to go on the attack, we're going to take this message out there and let people know just how serious this is?
I don't think it's a specific plan. I think this is probably just the point where nobody thought we would get to, and they were hobbling along trying to make the money last and make things work. But universities like Eastern and Western have different financial situations than the University of Illinois system, and I think they're in a tougher spot, and they're starting to realize that the budget may not happen this fiscal year and maybe might not happen by the next fiscal year before a general election or a primary election. So I think it's a more bleak outlook that a lot of people are having in the state.
And at the time, wasn't the president's comments, weren't those made before a Senate Appropriations Committee? And so maybe that's why we're seeing some of this come out now, because the Senate Appropriations Committee was having hearings this past week on a number of different agency budgets as well as on higher education.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that, Charlie. I think the university presidents, though, have had to really struggle, or maybe that's not the right word, but they've had to walk a very careful line in their view about, you know, on the one hand, painting a picture of horribles for state legislators and policymakers, and on the other hand, not scaring off potential recruits for their campuses. We heard from the president of Southern Illinois University, who says, you know, SIU is not going anywhere. We're going to stay open. It's just there's going to be questions about various programs. And it's anecdotal, but he talked about how he was at the eye doctor, I think, this week, and somebody, his eye doctor, was saying that, you know, that the doctor's child was considering SIU, but was instead going to end up going out of state because just there, you know, the uncertainty hanging over the campus and various programs and whether they would be able to continue in, you know, throughout however many more months or potentially years of not having a state appropriation we're going to have.
And I think we've been expecting this. The question had long been, all right, what is going to be the breaking point for some sort of resolution on a budget? And we had seen the legislature, when there were emergency or you know, really timely situations coming to the rescue of these different areas. But both sides kind of need some leverage. It's been this talk of hostage taking on each side. It is clear that the governor, he says he supports education, supports higher ed, that this is terrible, but that he has disdain for how the higher education system has worked thus far and wants some major changes. I think for, on the part of universities, you know, it's a delicate dance of how much, because of what Brian has said and also just the politics of it, these are the legislators who at some point they need the appropriations from, so they don't want to be too nasty. But at some point, you have to stop being polite when things really get desperate. And it is clear that for some of these universities, it's at that point. For others, it isn't. And that's where you're seeing, you know, the University of Illinois has this new football coach, who's getting a Lovie Smith's going to get this grand salary, and they had to come out in front and say, hey, we're not using state dollars for this. This is all coming from donors. But those are the sort of questions that people from the outside will say, you know, universities, how can you make the point that you're struggling and then go out and do this? Hire a new football coach. Are you really in that state of emergency? U of I may not be, but it is for other schools, and you really do need to look at the offshoots of it. So not only is it, all right, students who are choosing to go out of state for college, maybe that hurts universities, because of course the more tuition dollars they count on tuition dollars to thrive, so it's hurting them there, and it's hurting the communities. I mean, this is an economic issue for places like Macomb, like Charleston, where Eastern is based, like Carbondale, where the universities are the economic engines, and if they struggle, then so does the rest. So it's really going to be something to watch beyond just from the universities themselves.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, Carbondale's a good example, having grown up in that area. I mean, losing 100 jobs or more there is like a factory shutting down. I mean, it would have a huge impact. So certainly it's something I can understand why they have changed their tone a bit. Now, Governor Rauner did come out this week. He also went on the attack. We know things aren't going to get a lot better because Senate Democrats now, they're not going to be back, I guess, until April. So we're not going to see any action for the next couple of weeks. And that's what the governor was talking about.
Yeah, a point of fact that the Senate Democrats are coming back after the primary. Okay. They're taking a significantly shorter break than the House. But yeah, the House Democrats, it's been on the calendar all spring. The House Democratic spokesman pointed out for several months now that they would be taking off basically the week before the primary election, the week after the primary election. That is not that unusual. And then they're taking 2 weeks off for Easter, which happens to come fairly early this year. So altogether, they're going to be gone from town for 4 weeks. Again, this is not necessarily unusual in these election years, but from a, as the DC pundits like to say, the optics are terrible. As Illinois is, you know, we're hearing this parade of horribles in the legislature about all the, you know, programs that are having to be cut, and social service agencies are shutting their doors and turning away clients, and universities having big problems. Meanwhile, they're gone from Springfield for a month, so the governor is using that opportunity to try to score some rhetorical points.
And of course, the poor governor is just a helpless victim. He's there wringing his hands about all this horrible stuff that Mike Madigan's doing. He is the governor of the state, for heaven's sake. He's the head of the executive branch. There's nothing that would stop him from calling the General Assembly into special session. There's nothing that would stop him from picking up the phone and calling Madigan and say, I want to meet with you sometime next week. You name the date, and will you do it at my office, you and the other leaders, and we'll sit down and try and hash some of this stuff out. He strikes me as not using the tools that are at his disposal where he's seriously interested in trying to resolve these crises.
Well, there's no doubt this is a political move, and you're trying gain some points and all. But in the scheme of things, I think what Brian was pointing out, Charlie, was that it was also – it doesn't look good, I guess, to the average voter. They're wondering, why aren't you guys working around the clock
agree.
On this?
I think what aggravates me is back in the day – and again, I sound like an old curmudgeon, which maybe I am. Back in the day, we had leadership – that would play these stupid games for a while, and then they'd sit down and they decide, okay, this nonsense is beyond us. Now we're going to go to work and get stuff done. And it's unprecedented that we've dragged on without a budget for the fiscal year until almost three quarters of the fiscal year is gone.
We did hear a little bit at the start of the show from Senator Kwame Raoul. He's a Chicago Democrat, arguing a bit with the administration's lobbyist Rich Goldberg. And it was talking about compromise, who wanted to be at the table more, things like that. Can somebody give us a little background on what that outburst was about?
Yeah, there was a hearing about this. One of the – you'll remember during the governor's budget address, he said, okay, here's the budget that I would like you to pass, and if you don't do that, then give me this extraordinary authority to make unilateral cuts and move money around government. So there was some discussion of that, and then, you know, as often happens with these things, it got turned into a discussion of the history and who wants to compromise more and who's serious about compromising. And – you know, really the problem is that the governor doesn't want to negotiate on the budget until the Democrats agree to certain aspects of his agenda, which include, helping out the bottom line of businesses through workers' compensation and lawsuit changes and weakening the power of labor unions. And Democrats say that's a non-starter for them. And there you have it, that you have one brick wall on one side and a brick wall on the other, or a Maginot line, choose your metaphor. And neither side is really in a position where they can even begin negotiating on those details, because they each have so many such a stark difference of views on the sort of basic conditions under which Illinois should move forward.
Yeah, that fight turned into a little bit of a history lesson since basically Governor Rauner took office and this impasse started. And it, again, speaks to sort of the faux outrage that I feel like we're hearing from Republicans now. You can be upset that nobody's at work, but you guys have been in and out of session for the past 9 months, and that hasn't produced any results. So why does the House being here now mean that something's going to happen? It doesn't seem like anyone is really ready to sit down and hash out these very hard and complicated policy issues yet. So I don't know if the House being here is going to make a difference.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly, you know, the things were maybe not quite as bad as they are now a few months ago when the governor went on vacation to what was at the time an undisclosed foreign location. We later learned he was visiting some of his kids who were studying abroad, and it included a camel ride in Africa, I guess, his trip. And I mean, you know, people are allowed to take vacations. And so the idea that they're, you know, suddenly discovering that this is a terrible thing now, it's a little bit rich.
Well, you know,
pun intended.
The fact that, once in a while, people need to take time off. And sometimes that can actually help with negotiations. Get away from the table, then come back, you know, clear your mind a little bit, think about it a bit more. Amanda, I don't get the feeling, though, that when they come back, we're going to be any closer to settling this whole impasse.
No, there'd been a lot of prognosticating that, okay, we will see something change in January when it would take fewer votes for a budget or anything contentious to pass and take effect immediately. Didn't see that happen at the start of the new year. Then the notion was, okay, maybe after the primary, which, of course, we will see when the House returns. It'll be weeks after the primary is over. Maybe that will change things. We're looking at some key races to see, is that going to tilt the power at all? Primarily, you'll see quote unquote proxy wars between the governor and Madigan on the part of a race in the Springfield area. It's a large district that goes out west with Republican Senator Sam McCann, and then also in his opponent, Bryce Benton, who is a state trooper, and then going up north to Chicago, Ken Duncan, who has been aligned with Rauner and is seeing unions fight him and Democratic allies, whereas Duncan, a Democrat, is being supported by Rauner folks. Is that going to change things? Will it say anything to the rank and file, particularly, again, as these universities are really hurting? Those are often in GOP districts. Is it going to get bad enough that Republicans will no longer toe the governor's long-term pro-business line and say, we've got to get to the here and now? Or on the opposite side, will Democrats perhaps leave the speaker at all? I think that that's less likely, just because their ideology is more aligned with the speaker's, whereas for many Republicans, what Rauner wants, they support it, but maybe not to the extreme or the length that he does. So perhaps we will see something change after the primary, but really the expectation is that now we're going to have a whole lot of races. It's not just the primary. You have at the very least, I believe, some you'll have a lot of contested general election races. So this could be until November.
Well, we were just talking a couple of weeks ago about how the governor gave his budget address and he was, you know, had a little bit more of a handout to Democrats saying, I'm willing to work with you. And Charlie, I think you even you certainly studied that budget and also what he had to say that day. But it doesn't seem as though right now that anybody's willing to accept that hand because it also comes with a lot of things attached to it.
Well, it's on the one hand, do something that you really don't want to do, or on the other hand, do something you really don't want to do. If the governor were to modify his position, his anti-union rhetoric, and say, okay, we're going to focus on workers' compensation, we're going to focus on getting changes in the laws and the procedures for pursuing personal injury lawsuits, that would be a place to start. And the Democrats could say, okay, we're going to work with you on workers' compensation, because that's an issue in the past that has had negotiations and compromises. As a matter of fact, there were changes put in place not that many years ago that have reduced costs. That's something you could go forward on. And on the other stuff, just agree to disagree. Yeah, Governor, you hate unions. Yeah, we're Democrats. Part of our DNA is to be union believers. And just let it go at that. And instead of focusing on the stuff that keeps us apart, try and find things where we can start to work together. Now, the governor, as was mentioned earlier, has this ideology that I think a lot of Republicans, particularly downstate, don't really share. They're not that interested in busting unions as they are in doing some of the other things, workers' compensation reform. That's what really hurts the business community. It's not the fact that that AFSCME represents 30,000 state workers. It's the cost for workers' compensation. And that's something I think that is ripe for negotiation and compromise.
Well, let me switch gears here for a little bit, because it is coming up to the Illinois primary election on Tuesday. Amanda, you gave us a little bit of a preview there with a couple of races. What amazes me, and I was talking with somebody yesterday who follows this pretty closely about how much money is already being spent in the race for the McCann seat, which is, I believe, is that the 50th district, I think, Senate district?
Correct.
And then also that race in the Chicago area involving the incumbent Democrat Ken Duncan. The amount of money being spent in primary legislative races is pretty
millions
astronomical.
Of dollars.
I'm assuming these will be record setters for primaries.
I think you're right, Sean, although what is interesting about it is they're not record setters from the campaigns themselves.
Right.
It is very much the rise of super PACs or independent expenditures is what they're known as.
Dark money.
Yeah. I mean, we don't quite know where it's coming from oftentimes, and it is millions and millions and millions of dollars. In the Duncan race in Chicago, that Duncan versus Juliana Stratton is his opponent, that is just a really small pocket of the city. And then for the Sam McCann Bryce Benton race downstate, I mean, millions of dollars again being spent in an area that is huge in geographic size, but you don't typically see that sort of money in a downstate race where it's a lot less expensive to run spots and such on TV. But you can't turn on TV without seeing it. It is astronomical how much money is being spent. And it is, I think, because so much really rests in it, both just in perhaps the actual votes when it comes down to it, but really this sign of who's in charge, how much power does either Madigan or the governor have, and how far does their influence and money go?
Well, and certainly in the Rauner case, I think there were some people that thought, why is he going after this incumbent? Why is he getting involved in, you know, being upset over Sam McCann going against him on a vote involving unions that do make up a lot of his district, union members? At the same time, I thought that early on, and I thought, you know, if he wins this, it certainly sends a message to the governor. But now after watching this race and how much money has been spent, how nasty this race has gotten, it makes me think that the message has been received loud and clear by other Republicans. And I think they will probably be a little, wary of trying to maybe go against the governor. I mean, that's my thinking. And that includes whether McCann
is going to get that.
Yeah, whether he wins or loses.
Yeah, and McCann is not just, you know, potentially, you know, going to lose an election. I mean, there's been all this stuff dredged up about potential improprieties have been alleged regarding his campaign reimbursements, or certainly questions have been raised about his mileage reimbursements. And then there's, you know, his alleged military record. He apparently enlisted in the Marine Corps, but never even went to boot camp. And at some point had claimed that he had, you know, been discharged from the Marines and couldn't produce his papers. And this, all this stuff is getting dragged out again. And I think you're right, Sean. It's a message that, you know, and it, you think about
watch
it.
Watch it. Stay in line.
Stay
or
in
else.
Line. But the vote wasn't even really critical. It's not like he was the deciding vote on this. It was a little bit of cherry on top of the Democrats' icing in the bill that they were passing on behalf of labor unions. And it just the governor decided that, no, this is something I'm going to need you to be with me 100% on these things. And if you're not, then you're against me 100%. And I think that we're seeing that play out. And this seems to be entirely about enforcement of the governor's discipline and his control of the party.
That's certainly it. And it strikes me as being a sign of unfamiliarity with how the legislative process works. Because in my mind, a truly effective leader realizes that there are issues on which, for the sake of the constituents in someone's district, a particular legislator might disagree with me, the governor, or me, the speaker. And on those issues, if I don't need the vote, I give them a pass. Say, vote your district. Yeah. It's not you have to be lockstep in march with me, and if you cross me on one thing, you're on my enemies list. No offense to Senator McCann, but his vote is meaningless in the Illinois Senate on any issue that has partisan implications. So like you said, his voting on that override of the arbitration bill, that was just what did you say? A cherry on top of the icing?
Yeah,
yeah. And those are the kind of issues where in the past, someone who in my mind would be a more sophisticated leader would say, "Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. Vote what's best for you back in your district."
Although I would say, Charlie, I'm not sure that. Unfamiliarity, possibly, but possibly also a familiarity with the way things have worked in the past and a desire to change it, right? To bring some of that Washington, D.C. rigid party adherence to ideology attitude to Springfield. I mean, Springfield, one of the reasons the Democrats, as you all know, have such strong majorities is that they tolerate a lot of ideological diversity. You have pro-gun Democrats, anti-tax Democrats, and you certainly had pro-union Republicans until Governor Rauner came in and started enforcing his way. And now suddenly you cannot find, at least based on the voting history, a very few pro-union Republicans. Just Senator McCann and then Senator Neil Anderson also voted on behalf of this the union arbitration legislation the time it came up again this spring.
Which is
the proper approach in Illinois, and it's based on my having watched this stuff for a long time, where smart leaders on both sides of the aisle would realize there are certain issues that are going to help my lawmaker or hurt my lawmaker back home. And if the vote really doesn't make any difference, then I tell the lawmaker, you vote what's best for your district.
Although we don't have to keep this going back and forth forever, but I think the governor's viewpoint is if I can get somebody in there who will just vote for me 100% of the time, then I'd rather have that than somebody who's worried about his constituents. I'd rather have somebody who's going to be with me 100% of the time. And I think that's what the governor's doing.
Amanda, let me give you the last word on this.
Oh, I just wanted to point out, I do think it is worth mention, as Brian noted, that one Senator, Neil Anderson, did also vote, quote, against the governor on this arbitration bill after all of the nastiness about McCann had come out. He doesn't have any election this year. But nonetheless, you did see at least one Republican kind of step out there and stand up for his district. And Anderson is also a union member himself, has lots of union ties. But it is significant. He, you know, has seen what is coming and nonetheless took that step. And further, I think you would have a lot of Republicans point out and say, well, hey, you're looking at what's being done to McCann. Look at Ken Duncan. And Duncan himself has said, wait a second, I was fine for Democrats for 10 years. Then all of a sudden, wait, what now? Now, nasty things about my past in terms of not paying child support, some assault charges in long ago are all coming out. These are the people that had long supported me, and they were fine with it. Again, the Democrats' defense to that, however, I think would be that it's not just one vote and it wasn't just sticking with a party. They believe that Duncan truly did abandon some core principles for unions and that he just did not behave. He skipped session. He didn't answer the speaker's phone calls. That members of his own party are very upset with his actions.
Well, and a more practical reason is that Duncan is the 71st Democrat. And so his vote on contested issues like overrides isn't going to be superfluous. His vote is the vote, the critical vote, without which some of the things that the Democrats were trying to do went down.
Well, there's certainly more to vote on in the primary as well, and many people have already cast those early votes. Races for Congress, U.S. Senate, also president, and we will be recapping a lot of the results next week on the show. But I did want to leave some time for notes from the field. Charlie Wheeler, we'll start with you.
Okay, well, we talked about a couple contested primaries, but something that I found very interesting is that in the Senate, there are 40 seats up, and of those 40, 29 don't have opposition from the other party. And as a result, the Democrats are already guaranteed that they will have at least 31 seats in next year's legislature.
Which is a majority.
Which is a majority. And in the House, there are 76 members, 46 or 76 seats, 46 Democrat, 30 Republican, in which there's no opponent from the other party. So those folks, the majority party's nominee, those folks are guaranteed of election. And I say that because there's an opportunity for party leaders to fill those vacancies and nominations after the primary. And I went back and researched from the 2002 election forward. There have been 164 people added to the ballot, or people as write-ins. You know how many of those 164 succeeded? Zero. So that's 0 for 164 for the late adds. And only about a couple dozen of them got more than 40% of the vote.
Jordan Abadea.
So we talked a lot about the House not being in session this week, and I think, or the rest of the month, really. And I think one of the interesting things is people had asked the governor when he was scolding House Democrats, why don't you just call them back into special session? And he claimed, well, I can't do that because I don't want to spend all that money. But if Speaker Madigan calls them back, we are going to be spending that money either way. So they get their per diems and, you know, they get their paycheck. So I think, you know, if we really want the House back here, someone needs to take a stand, whether that's the governor or Madigan. We need to take the stand and we need to stop hiding behind the excuse that we don't want to pay lawmakers for showing up, because I don't think that's a valid excuse right now. So I thought that was interesting.
Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I just want to go back to this idea of, you know, whether the House should be here or not. The leaders have not met now. We're coming up on 3 months again since the last time all four legislative leaders met with the governor. Of course, the very last meeting they had, Speaker Madigan had a scheduling conflict, did not show up. The governor says he doesn't think it'd be productive to meet again, but I think that the average Illinoisan would find that pretty stunning, that the top people in Illinois, the top politicians, are not even sitting down in the same room to try and solve this difference.
And Amanda, 20 seconds.
All right, let's say off to the races. Hawthorne Racetrack is reopening, but the state of horse racing in Illinois is still hurting. No longer any races at Maywood and Balmoral. And a quick sign of the times in terms of how many super PACs there are. There's just been filed now. Driver's education teachers have their own super PAC committee.
That will do it for State Week in Review for this week. Members for our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Jordan Abadea, reporter for WICS-TV in Springfield. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search WUIS on iTunes. And the production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.